Nikki Strong. IamNikkiStrong. And this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo and John Russell, as well as a public service announcement from Jonathan Evans. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly tells the story of John Adams, the second president in United States history, as part of our ongoing series, America's Presidents. But first, the Higher Education Report. Gregory Mignot came to the United States from his native Jamaica over 20 years ago on a student visa. He was able to make a career in architecture in America thanks to temporary work visas. The 43-year-old is now a U.S. citizen and co-creator of a property development business in Boston, Massachusetts. But he worries that new proposed restrictions on student and work visas will prevent others from following a similar path to the American dream. Mignot told the Associated Press that society improves when there are lots of different kinds of people living and working together. To not have peers from other countries collaborating side by side with Americans is going to be a setback for the country. We learned from Americans, but Americans also learn from us, he said. Mignot is among the business and academic leaders asking U.S. President Donald Trump not to expand the temporary visa restriction established in April. They argue that barring skilled foreign workers will hurt the economy and limit innovation at a time when it is needed most. But others say the visa restriction did not go far enough and have been calling for stronger action. As COVID-19 spread across the U.S., the president established a 60-day halt on visas for foreigners seeking permanent residency. But his April 22nd order included a long list of exceptions. It also did not cover the hundreds of thousands of guest worker and student visas issued each year. Republican senators, including Tom Cotton of Arkansas and Ted Cruz of Texas, argue all new guest worker visas should be suspended for at least 60 days. That or until unemployment has returned to normal levels. In a letter to Trump last month, they wrote, "Given the extreme lack of available jobs, it defies common sense to admit additional foreign guest workers to compete for such limited employment." Trump administration officials have been debating how long any new order should remain in place and which industries should be excluded, like healthcare and food production. But officials have made it clear they are considering suspending H-1B visas for high-skilled workers. The same goes for H-2B visas for seasonal workers and L-1 visas for employees leaving their old job for a position with a company in the U.S. In recent weeks, businesses and academic groups have also been voicing concern about possible changes to the Optional Practical Training, or OPT, program. OPT is a relatively little-known program that permits some 200,000 foreign students, mostly from China and India, to work in the country each year. Created in the 1940s, OPT permits international students to work for up to 1 year during college or after they complete their studies. Over the last 10 years, the program has been extended for those studying science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. They can now work for up to 3 years. Republican lawmakers have been some of the strongest critics of the program. But some argued that OPT is necessary for the country to remain a welcome place for international students. They wrote to the Trump administration that the students and their families add more than $40 billion yearly into the economy. That is despite the fact that they represent just 5.5% of the U.S. college student population. Companies and academic organizations also warn of a reverse brain drain. That is a situation in which foreign students just take their American education to help another nation's economy. Some critics say OPT gives companies a financial reason to employ foreigners over Americans because they do not have to pay some federal taxes. The program also lacks oversight and has become a popular path for foreigners seeking legal permission to stay, said Jessica Vaughn. She is policy director at the Center for Immigration Studies, a Washington group that fights for strong immigration limits. The government does not require that there be actual training, and no one checks on the employer or terms of employment, she said. Some are career students, going back and forth between brief degree programs and employment, just so they can stay here. Andrew Tarsi says, in Massachusetts, removing OPT would put a major part of the state's economy at risk. He is the co-creator of the Massachusetts Business Immigration Coalition. Earlier this month, the group of nearly 50 businesses and colleges, including TripAdvisor and the University of Massachusetts, sent a letter to Trump asking him not to cut the program. "We attract the brightest people in the world to study here," Tarsi said. "It's led to the founding of many, many companies and the creation of new products and services. It's the bridge for international students." I'm Pete Musto.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Every year, the United States celebrates Father's Day on the third Sunday in June. Other countries, such as Britain, Canada, India, Ireland, Mexico, also celebrate fathers on this Sunday in June. But some countries choose to celebrate fathers at other times of the year. In Australia, Father's Day is celebrated on the first Sunday in September. In Norway, Sweden, and Finland, the holiday falls on the second Sunday in November. In countries with a strong Roman Catholic tradition, for example, Italy, Spain, and Portugal, Father's Day falls on March 19th. That is the main feast day of a religious holiday honoring Saint Joseph. He was the husband of Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ. And China celebrates Father's Day on August 8th, the eighth day in the eighth month of the year. Why on that day, you may ask? The word in Chinese for eight is ba, and two of them, baba, is a term for father in Chinese. Regardless of when or even if your country holds Father's Day, today we will celebrate fathers around the world with a father-related expression. Success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. The phrase has this meaning. People are often quick to connect themselves to successful events and distance themselves from failed ones. So you can use this expression when talking about people wanting to be close to success or far away from failure. Here is an example. Let's say you are working hard on a risky business project. There is a good chance that it could fail. For that reason, other people do not want to help you. They keep their distance. So you are forced to work by yourself. Finally, you complete the project, and over time, it becomes a huge success. So you decide to throw a celebration party. Now, some of the people who thought it would fail come to your party. They want to be close to you and your successful project. They may say things like, "I knew you could do it," or "I had a feeling this was a great idea." You can say to them, "Yes, success has many fathers." You don't even have to say the whole phrase. They should understand the insult. Several websites claim that the man who first used this phrase was an Italian diplomat named Count Caliazzo Ciano. He was married to the daughter of Benito Mussolini, Italy's leader during World War II. In 1961, U.S. President John F. Kennedy popularized this saying. Kennedy used the expression in a speech when he announced the failure of the U.S.-supported Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba. Perhaps some people wanted to distance themselves from the failed invasion, but Kennedy, as commander-in-chief, could not. He changed a few words, but the meaning is still the same. Here is part of his 1961 address to the American people.
There's an old saying that victory has 100 fathers and defeat is an orphan. I've said as much as I feel can be usefully said by me in regard to the events of the past few days. Further statements, detailed discussions are not to conceal responsibility because I'm the responsible officer of the government, but merely because I, and that is quite obvious, but merely because I do not believe that such a discussion would benefit us during the present difficult situation.
That was former President John F. Kennedy expanding on the phrase, "Success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan." And that is Words and Their Stories for Father's Day. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo. If I could get another chance, another walk, another dance with him, I'd place on the...
Scientists recently reported an unusual finding. The discovery of the second largest egg known to exist. The egg, a 68-million-year-old fossil, was found on Seymour Island, off the coast of Antarctica. The fossil is said to be about the size of a football, without the air inside.
It measures around 29 centimeters by 20 centimeters. It is only a little smaller than the eggs of the large elephant birds of Madagascar, which died off some time ago, scientists said. While birds and many dinosaurs produced hard-shelled eggs, the Antarctic egg has a soft shell. This new egg is the very first fossil egg from Antarctica and the largest soft-shelled egg ever discovered, said Luca Legendre. He is a paleontologist at the University of Texas at Austin. He was the lead writer of the report published in the journal Nature. Legendre compared the egg to a football that had lost its air. One side is flattened, suggesting that is where it came in contact with the seafloor. Its eggshell is very thin and poorly mineralized, like in the eggs of lizards and snakes, he said. At the time the egg was made, the only creatures in Antarctica that were large enough to lay it were seagoing reptiles. The discovery of the fossil makes researchers question the idea that these animals only gave birth to live young. The bones of the mother were not found, so scientists were not able to say which animal laid it. Among the likely creatures to have laid it are species of mosasaurs and plesiosaurs. The former could reach lengths of 15 meters, while the latter could reach lengths of 10 meters, Legendre said. Mosasaurs and plesiosaurs died off at the same time as the dinosaurs. They disappeared after an asteroid, a small rocky object, reportedly struck Earth some 66 million years ago. Scientists from the University of Chile and Chile's Museum of Natural History found the unusual fossil in 2011. Unsure about what it was, they called it The Thing, after the name of a science fiction film. When we arrived at camp, we asked the geologists that accompanied us if they had ever seen anything like it, said University of Chile paleontology researcher Rodrigo Otero. Their expression of bewilderment said it all. I'm John Russell.
Are you at risk of getting seriously ill from the new coronavirus? Here are some things to keep in mind. 80% of coronavirus cases are mild. Young and healthy people are at low risk. Other people and those with serious health conditions have a greater risk of serious illness or even death. If you have a cough, fever, and difficulty breathing, contact the doctor and stay away from other people. To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about John Adams. In 1796, he was elected as the country's second president.
Being second can be difficult. And being the second president of a new country, following a popular first president, such as George Washington, turned out to be extremely difficult. For one thing, Adams did not always get along with other people. He was known to get angry easily and often. Adams also was leader of a divided administration. His own vice president often disagreed with him, passionately. The situation was the result of a rule in the Constitution at the time. It said the person who received the majority of votes became president. The person with the second largest number of votes became vice president. The rule worked fine for the first two elections. Washington had won the presidency, and Adams won the vice presidency. The two men belonged to the same political party and shared many points of view. But in 1796, Adams' opponent in the election, Thomas Jefferson, became the vice president. The two men were personal friends, but political enemies. President Adams supported a strong federal government that protected the interests of business and the wealthy. Vice President Jefferson, on the other hand, wanted to limit the power of the federal government. As a result, Adams and Jefferson often clashed. Adams also made what many historians consider a mistake in choosing his cabinet. Adams simply kept George Washington's official advisers, mostly to satisfy political opponents. But later, Adams learned that many of his cabinet members opposed him too. Historian John Ferling says, Adams was in over his head and started swimming upstream almost from the start of his presidency. On top of all that, Adams faced a foreign policy crisis. After the French Revolution, Great Britain allied with other European nations against France. They wanted to keep the unrest from spreading to their countries. Adams worked hard to make sure the U.S. did not get pulled into a war between France and Great Britain. But France did not trust the U.S. It tried to interrupt trade by seizing U.S. ships. Adams wanted to resolve the problem peacefully. He threatened military action, but he also sent diplomats to talk with French officials. Adams aimed for an honorable peace with France. It took some time, but he got it. Historian John Ferling says, although the crisis in Europe caused Adams endless trouble, he dealt with it well. Many years later, Adams wrote that the greatest jewel in his crown was reaching peace with France. Even if Adams struggled as president, he was successful in other parts of his life. He grew up outside the city of Boston. His father was a farmer, as well as a church official and town leader. However, Adams chose to attend Harvard University and become a lawyer. Adams was a very good lawyer. In fact, he was one of the busiest lawyers in Boston. His success enabled him to buy a big, two-story house that still stands in Quincy, Massachusetts. Adams also had a happy marriage. The relationship between him and his wife, Abigail, is one of the best known of that time. The two wrote many letters to each other during the years they were apart. more than 1,000 of their letters still survive today. John and Abigail Adams were both passionate patriots who supported the American Revolution. They also agreed about the issue of slavery. Unlike many founding families of the U.S., the couple did not own slaves and spoke out against the system of people owning other people. In November of 1800, John and Abigail Adams moved to the Executive Mansion in Washington, D.C. Adams was the first president to live in what we now call the White House. They would not stay long, however. Adams was facing a difficult re-election campaign. His vice president, Thomas Jefferson, was running against him. His party was divided. Many Federalists supported other candidates. And some voters did not like his decisions, including creating a permanent army, raising taxes, and limiting the rights of immigrants. Those four laws, called the Alien and Sedition Acts, extended the time that immigrants had to wait before becoming U.S. citizens. They permitted the government to detain citizens from enemy nations without reason during wartime. The laws also permitted the president to expel foreign citizens he believed were dangerous. And they made criticizing the president or Congress a crime. Adams said the acts aimed to control people in the U.S. who supported France. But many politicians at the time argued that the laws mostly affected people who supported the opposing political party. Historian John Ferling says they were right, and he says Adams may have been using the Alien and Sedition Acts to protect his political career, but they ended up damaging his public image. They also raised the question for the first time of whether states had the right to ignore a federal law if they disagreed with it. Supporters of Vice President Thomas Jefferson used Adams' approval of the Alien and Sedition Acts against him effectively. Jefferson's campaign said Adams exercised so much power as president that he must want the U.S. to become a monarchy. Adams' campaign said Jefferson was a radical who would bring revolution to the country. The U.S. had never experienced such an ugly election before. Some people wondered whether the country would be able to transfer power peacefully. When Jefferson won, however, Adams did not resist. He retired to his farm in Massachusetts. Adams spent most of his retirement writing. He even began exchanging long letters with his old friend and old enemy, Thomas Jefferson. The two men discussed their families, their thoughts on politics and religion, and their nation's history. The letters were both personally and historically meaningful. Adams and Jefferson were the last living members of the original Patriots who started a new country. On July 4th, 1826, the nation's 50th birthday, the two friends, patriots, and former U.S. presidents died within hours of one another. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.